Good evening, groundlings. Attention, please. Gilly Potter is addressing you. Tonight, as the more intelligent of you may be aware, I start a series of uplifting utterances upon many matters of moment. At suitable intervals from now until the millennium, my dulcet voice will break in upon the oppressive atmosphere of your minds like some gust of intellectual ozone, wafting away the cobwebs of conceit and leaving behind a cleaner, if greater, vacuum than existed before. When first besought by the Decca Record Company to be so gracious as to make my vast knowledge of all matters the common property of the mob, I was also petitioned to choose as my medium for enlightening you some such topic as has yet either attracted but little attention from other great minds or received no publicity at all. I purpose, therefore, to say something about Russia. It is no easy task for me to tell you the truth about Russia, or for that matter, coming as I do from a family of lawyers, tell you the truth about anything. I would much sooner have told you the truth about Hobbs Norton, which is awful, or the truth about Jack Hilton, which is more awful still. By the way, the photographs which that person, totally devoid of any sense of shame, is forwarding, often unasked, to the budding womanhood of this country, though signed by him, are not photos of him at all. They are photos of me. Jack Hilton's personal appearance is highly inducive of terror in the aged and convulsions of the young, whereas my own individual attributes are of a gentle, soft, even balmy nature. Of these photographs of mine, he obtained by strategy two gross, which he sells to innocent maidenhood at 1 shilling the small size, larger size containing 3 times the amount, 2 shillings and 3pence. By means of this fraudulent pictorial misrepresentation, he has been enabled to build onto his house a bathroom, into which a cold water pipe has already been introduced. Early next year, a hot water pipe will be put in, and sometime during the year after, the bath itself. I hereby most definitely assert that I do not sell my photographs, that I have never sold my photographs, and I never will sell my photographs. I am, however, quite prepared to give one of my photographs to anyone who will forward me a postal order for 25 shillings to defray postage. Each photograph is handsomely framed and depicts me at Clapham Junction holding a second-class ticket but entering a third-class carriage in order to avoid Jack Hilton, who was travelling in the only second-class carriage with a third-class ticket, a great moral improvement upon his customary practice, which is to travel in a first-class carriage with no ticket at all. But now to our topic, Russia. I purpose dealing with the subject by asking you 4 questions and answering them myself. These questions are, what is Russia? Where is Russia? Why is Russia? And when is Russia? I will answer them in true Russian fashion, tale first. When is Russia? Russia, alas, is now, at the present moment, as it was all day yesterday, and will be, I fear, all day tomorrow. It has become an eternal serial with a new plot each morning. Next, why is Russia? Russia is because the murder season now at its height is proving a poor one, and the divorce crop always at its height is equally disappointing, so we are treated to Russia for breakfast, Russia for lunch, and as a change, Russia for tea. Now, where is Russia? Russia is in the newspapers, on the front pages you dip in and on the back pages you drop out. It has been there for years. When I was a boy, it was there. I am still a boy, and Russia is still there. My belief is that were some tidal wave to engulf Russia completely, no newspaper would appear again, and by the following Friday, Fleet Street would be a fun fair. I have never been a newspaper man. A brother of mine, of whom we never speak, learnt to play the saxophone, but that is as low as any member of my family has ever sunk. Nonetheless, I am convinced that when some poor misguided youth determines, in the face of conscience and the finer feelings generally, to hitch his wagon to a newspaper, he is not asked his age, his name is not inquired, nor is his character investigated. One question alone is put to him, and that is, what do you know about Russia? It is all so trying to people who, like myself, when they open their newspaper, wish to learn and to learn quickly, not whether Trotsky is or is not like Lenin was or was not, but by how many goals this week Chelsea has lost. Finally, what is Russia? Russia is a square country with rounded edges. That is why so few people can see its points. Across Russia runs a range of mountains called in the north the Alps and in the south the Pennines. From the Pennines comes most of our gold and platinum, which are found there side by side and worked up link by link into what is called a Pennine chain. My Uncle Gregory of Grampound Road has one of these chains, or did have, before the slump in rubber, to which is attached a sovereign purse, minus the sovereigns, which disappeared during an earlier slump in rubber, and a Masonic charm of the shape and size of a small coconut, which opens out into a miniature Sahara completely covered with pyramids, the exact use and significance of which no one seems quite aware. Also dependent from the same chain in the southeasterly direction is another curious specimen of the goldsmith's art, the reward of some cycling feat performed by my uncle at the choir outing at Little Twittering in or about the year 1874. But to return to Russia. The principal towns in Russia are St. Petrograd, now called Petersburg, after Kidberg, whose other name is Peter, Moscow, now called Giup, after Trotsky, and Omsk, Tomsk, and Bomsk, so named after three well-known BBC announcers. Wigan is not in Russia, or was not at 3:30 this afternoon. The principal rivers of Russia are the Dnieper, the Pieper, and the Steeper, of which the Dnieper is the deeper. Other rivers are the Om, the Bong, and the Pong. From the point where these three join and form one stout stream, it is called the Om Bong Pong. The caviar dwells in this river, where it is caught upon pieces of dry toast, carefully counted, and then thrown back again until the price is higher. Russia is a large country and extends from Vladivostok in the far east to as far west as Aldgate. The Russians are intensely musical. Their native instrument is the samovar, which every housewife plays to a tea. The Russian national costume is a long white nightshirt tucked into Wellington boots. The Russians cultivate their beards to an alarming extent. In fact, the general facial appearance of a Russian gentleman is not dissimilar to that of an untidy English hedgerow. Similar in another respect, too, in that in early spring, a healthy Russian beard is alive with every known species of bird life. And to attend a meeting of the Soviet in the month of May is a feast of nature in full song. The Russian instrument of torture is the whip, but about the Russian whip I will say nout. The Russian diet consists of half a herring per man, per day, perhaps. The poor Russian is in such a low state that he cannot say a word, whereas the herring is usually in such a high state that it speaks for itself. Russia exports bombs and propaganda. A bomb is a difficult thing to describe. It has the general appearance of one of my wife's Christmas puddings, though, of course, it is much lighter. A bomb is very unlike, for example, a child. For while a child should be seen but not heard, a bomb, to be really effective, should be heard but not seen. Propaganda is even more difficult to explain, but may be roughly described as something which you may say about the other fellow, but he mustn't say about you. Propaganda is very catching. A boatload arrived from Russia only yesterday morning, and its effect was immediately felt in the vicinity of the docks, where before midday quite small children were putting out their tongues at the school board inspector and refusing to curtsy to the Borough Surveyor's aunt. Russia has two urgent problems. Firstly, the rhubarb crop is a failure again this year, but the hundreds of square miles of crust prepared to receive the rhubarb in tart form will not be wasted. Indeed, after being dealt with by crushers, the use to which it is to be put will render the Russian arterial roads the finest in the world. The other problem is one which must be dealt with ere long, if not before then. I refer to the money paradox. Russia, as we all know from our newspapers, is bankrupt, has not a penny. And yet, as our newspapers also inform us, often in the same column, she is spending millions upon propaganda. How is this being done? In England, we have company promoters who know how to do this sort of thing, but Russia has none. Her company promoters are all in jail, not as here, allowed to go loose. My belief is that Russia is living on herself by selling herself. My belief is that every pound of propaganda which reaches this country is paid for by the partition of Petrograd. Could we but see it? My belief is that half the outer suburbs of all the high street of that place are gone, cut out, floated down the Dnieper, into the Pieper, up the Om, along the Bong, through the Pong, broken up into pieces suitably sized for framing and sold to the peasants of Poland as paperweights. Otherwise, how can this thing be? Or is it perhaps not? Good night, everyone.